Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 19th of August, 2020, and we have markets at an all-time high. We can say it in the U.S. finally, with the S&P 500 closing at that all-time high, NASDAQ 100 posting a strong session. There was, however, and I have absolutely no contributory factors to suggest why this happened. I thought a very odd bit of intraday volatility not long after the U.S. Open. Put a little inset on slide one. I was scratching around for attribution yesterday. There was a quite considerable volatility in the gold price around the same time. Also, no distinct trigger there. It was just after gold had once again crossed above $2,000 an ounce. But in the end, we saw a strong session in the U.S. And in the end, we also saw a weak session in Europe because the dollar, I assume this is the attribution here, the dollar going to new lows and Eurodollar popping reasonably above 119, although we're pretty modestly above that level. 119.50 around there was the high this morning. Nominally, slightly higher yesterday. Peter, anything you want to add to about what we've seen coming out of this session and what we're seeing in Europe?
No, I think it was a very strong session for U.S. equities yet again, but driven by technology stocks. As you mentioned, that intraday volatility, my initial gut feeling is that there is a lot of, because it happened just after the open, my gut feeling, and I have absolutely no data to pinpoint to, but I think that that surge in retail traders on Robinhood, E-Trade, and Charles Schwab, etc., but we also see it here at Saxo Bank, and I guess other electronic brokerage firms are seeing the same trend. And it's just, I think it's becoming a bigger force. And the reason why I think that is because it happened just after the open. I think that would be a natural time of the day where these people would go in and put a lot of orders on their phones. It's also a lot of mobile phone driven. They don't think so much about price action the way maybe institutional clients are thinking about it or investors are thinking about it. So I think it creates these blips now and then, something we have to get used to. But yeah, and coming back to the European session, I think you're absolutely right. We're trading water here in Europe, and I think it's definitely because of the euro. I'm wondering, and that's probably back into your ballpark, John, I wonder where the ECB will draw a line in the sand, because if Steen Jacobsen, our chief investment officer, is right that the Fed will maybe lay the groundwork or put the seed in the ground for a yield curve control at the Jackson Hole meeting that will be held very soon, then what does the ECB what are they going to do? I mean, will they accept a euro that is going higher? I find that, given Europe is so dependent on export, I don't find that very likely. But I don't know what your take on that.
You're getting ahead of the conversation here, but that's great. We're going to bring that in for sure. But no worries at all. I agree, and you still have the difficulty for the EU side for responding because of the ponderous EU framework and the way it does. It's just not as nimble as what can be done in the U.S. And, it is around 120 that I think the euro starts to hurt a bit here, and it's quite strong in broader terms as well. So you mentioned the KC Symposium. I'm calling it the KC Symposium, not Jackson Hole, because it's not physically taking place in Jackson Hole. It's been named that because it's where they gather in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. It is the Kansas City Fed that hosts this annually, this so-called symposium. It will be an online affair this time around. For obvious reasons, and we have it on the 27th and 28th. I'm a bit curious about the date. As far as I recall, it used to be Friday and Saturday, but those dates would be a Thursday and a Friday. But let's see if those dates stick. And you're right, that is the natural policy evolution. It is what is being talked about, yield curve control. The irony to me being that there really is no immediate need right now for this yield curve control. You're seeing a steeper curve, but not steep enough at the long end, certainly, than we've seen the last few days. The U.S. yields have at the long end have actually fallen, that you implement this when you have Treasury issuance at such a high rate that you need the Fed's backstopping yields implicitly to avoid any attack on by bond vigilantes or whatever to flush bonds, or to, you can't allow the yields to go too high because the government has to fund itself and can't afford any high interest rate payments.
But doesn't that mean, John, that the action swings to the dollar then? Because if you constrain your fixed income markets, then the only way the market can really express changes or hardship in the economy, et cetera, would then be via the currency.
So
you would expect being more actionable, I guess, or more
likely. Yes, exactly. And it would be relative negative real rates where you're that would drive the currency. So far, currency has proven less volatile. But I wrote a piece. This, I mean, gosh, I'll have to go back to when I wrote this. This is at least a couple months ago, maybe 3 months ago. The Brave New World of FX, where I tried to look forward to what a sort of everybody locking down their yield curves would mean, and the yield curve composite. And that's when you have fiscal in the driver's seat. And so it's not actually so much about what the Fed does. If we assume the Fed goes to this policy, that is, yes, of course, it's very interesting, but they can simply indicate and flag they will do this. But it really is then up to the fiscal side to move ahead with the aggressive stimulus that makes this an issue for the currency, and makes it an issue for the fact that real rates are going increasingly negative, as the market is sort of forecasting that they will, via break-evens and so on. So that's the interesting thing. And actually, on the fiscal front, we're seeing it here locally. I'm wondering if we're going to see the fiscal generosity that the market seems to be rather complacent about. It looks like the latest signals I can find here are that the Trump White House may be looking for some sort of very limited deal on stimulus that only sees stimulus where the two sides overlap. And it could be as little as $500 billion versus the $1 trillion that the Republicans have come with, and, of course, far smaller than the $3.5 trillion that the Democrats wanted. We may be sort of on a drip feed, in other words, on stimulus until post-election, when it becomes less of a posturing ahead of the election. So I think it's just a concern. I'm a bit curious why the market is so complacent on this. As we just noted, the S&P 500 going to all-time highs as well. It looks like some of these efforts by Trump on the payroll tax, they're stumbling, and some companies aren't participating because it's a deferral, and then they would have a larger tax before they're down the road. It's just like a bit of chaos there. And there's also mixed messages on whether some states are going for this $300 benefit weekly that Trump tried to do via executive order, and some are not. So it's all up in the air right now. Market's totally complacent, don't care. And the dollar is down. And if we look on slide 3, dollar yen, it did find support at the just ahead of 105. That is, I think, the last line in the sand, that area down to maybe 104.50. This is an area that has gathered up all sell-offs all the way back to early 2018. So it's really, really pivotal stuff on whether the Japanese yen gets an upper leg, gets a leg up on the dollar, and for the broader status of the dollar in general. We mentioned, of course, Eurodollar popping a new top well above 119. The positioning situation is the big angle there. I really don't have any, scratching our heads a bit, what is the immediate driver of this dollar weakness, except for fears down the road of what is coming post-election, post a Biden victory, I suppose. Not in terms of actual policy on the ground or certainly Fed liquidity measures, not moving the goalposts at all. Cable, notably on slide 4, popping a new top as well, but well above 132. This is the highest level, except for one little brief spike towards the end of last year, and opens up the territory towards 135, a massive level. You can look at your longer-term charts there. Brexit negotiations ongoing and not moving in a friendly fashion with the latest talk about the UK wanting trucking access to the EU. The EU is pushing back against the UK's hopes there. Time is running short here. We're down to the last 3 months plus a few days, and 4 months plus a few days before this deadline. And Boris Johnson said they won't extend the deadline, but for now, UK or the pound is doing quite well. It's actually pushing down a bit against the euro. Sterling is pushing down against some interesting support levels soon, the 0.90 level. We had a UK CPI release out yesterday, sort of escalating this narrative that we are seeing the inflation levels pushing back higher already. It was at a 1.8% at the core year on year versus far lower expected. And that level is something close to a 1 year high at the core, despite the collapse in energy prices. The narrative is that the stimulus has helped heat up demand. We have a narrative afoot here that's really going to be interesting, not reflected so much in bond yields, but it could be reflected in the gold price and other hard assets. And in eventually, like we talked about earlier, the relative negative rate spreads across currencies if this becomes a stronger theme in months to come. So keep an eye on inflation releases from here. It's certainly something we'll have to do. And then briefly on political news, another convention night for the Democrats last night, formally nominating Biden. So that's one one hack against the conspiracy theories suggesting he was going to be shunted to the side for another candidate at the convention, unless he himself announces in a speech that he's decided not to run. It looks like Biden is going to be the nominee. And then the postal funding issue appears to be getting settled here, where the new postmaster general says that funding will be maintained, and some of the activities related to mailboxes being removed and these kind of shenanigans appear to be stopped. Peter, and actually just before I go to you, Peter, back on a couple of equity stories you have, just want to point out the gold level. You know, there's a lot of gold trading going on. It's quite clear from yesterday's price action that the $2,000 level is quite the sticking point. So we saw it around 2015, maybe slightly higher yesterday. And then the sell-off just out of nowhere, very, very sharp spike intraday relative to the intraday price action. That was rejected, and now it's sort of come back lower, just below 2,000 again. So it looks like the $2,000 level is a sticking point. You would want to see a rally closing the gap back towards the high 2,050 or so, and then the price action maintaining with all this crazy volatility and nervousness. And I wonder, just from a technical point of view, we've seen such an acceleration that we could be in for a bout of consolidation unless this inflationary picks up massively and very soon. So, yeah, and so, Peter, you wanted to pick up on a couple of individual equity stories that you have in focus today.
So, first of all, here in Europe, we have the world's largest container shipping company, Maersk, actually lifting its forecast, or maybe clarifying its forecast for this year's operating profit. It's targeting $6 to $7 billion versus just below six for the consensus in the market. So that's obviously a positive. They do still see contraction in the overall container market, and for the whole year, that's not a big surprise. Q3, they're looking at a small quarter-on-quarter positive developments there from obviously still contracted levels. So things are improving. They seem a little bit more upbeat in their tone. So that's a good thing. Yesterday, maybe we can take those two here in a combination, both Walmart and Home Depot, as you know, more physical retailers out there. Delivered very strong earnings and sales, especially Home Depot. That's comparable sales numbers was plus 23% year a year for Q2 versus only 11% expected. So they really knocked it out of the ballpark there. Home Depot have really, it's a fascinating story. They were basically planning for a big slump in sales when the COVID-19 hit, and then they were massively surprised very quickly into the pandemic that people were remodeling, maybe out of boredom, I don't know. Well, at least they did a lot of, they're doing a lot of remodeling, and that's really what catapulted the stock back to all-time highs. And Walmart on slide 7, you can see the same thing, that the share price is very strongly bid. Again, I think it goes back to some of the themes that I've been talking about lately, earnings predictability. And in the case of also Walmart, the e-commerce was very strong. So I think that a lot of investors that are buying into Walmart are buying into, potentially an e-commerce story, and that could create an increase in the valuation metrics. Maybe not as far as what you see in Amazon, because that's a little bit of a different beast, but at least an improvement from its typically lower valuation points, because it was a traditional supermarket or retailer.
Well, Walmart was traditional. And you mentioned Amazon, and yesterday Amazon had a massive session, and I was asking you earlier if that was linked to the Walmart beat, and I guess their online results, and then just maybe reminding folks, refreshing folks' memory on that crazy positive quarter that Amazon had.
Yeah, exactly. But it also underscores the demand picture in the U.S. But there, I think there was a very interesting piece of information that came out of the conference call. So the Walmart management actually mentioned that they saw a significant slowdown in comparable sales in July. And they have seen some of the same behavior here in August. And they suspect it has something to do with the checks. So the checks amount.
Yes, I was going to just mention the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, they've been lowered from $600 to $400, where 100 of those are coming from the States now. And there was this big gap where the checks stopped because there were negotiations in Capitol Hill. And now that has been sorted out, at least temporarily, with an executive order by Trump. But I still think they haven't really locked in the actual deal to what essentially is universal basic income through the back door, I guess. So, but you can just see from the numbers, apparently, according to Walmart, that it is very important in order to support the economy at the current.
Yeah, and I've just for input, I mean, the typical Walmart customers, well, there's of course, a median customer, but at the lower end in terms of income and spending habits. You have Walmart is one of these stores that people are running out of money, running out of funds as the month progresses. So they actually change their assortment depending on the date we are or the day we are in the month to have smaller ticket items that people can afford. So there's just an idea of how important for a company like Walmart those stimulus checks might be.
Yeah. The final equity story I want to mention, John, is a company called C Limited. Probably not a company most of you have heard about listening to this podcast, but it's actually one of the absolutely best performing stocks this year. It came into the year at a stock level just north of $30, and now we're trading $145. It's a pure e-commerce play, an Amazon/JD.com from China, just with a very specific narrow focus on the Southeast Asia market. So countries like Cambodia, Thailand, etc. in that region. So it's a pure play outside China, but a play on Asia's growing middle class and the penetration of e-commerce and online sales in general. Very spectacular. Their revenue beat by 24%. Relative to estimates, revenue was up more than 102% year on year, and it's not a small shop any longer. They're very fast growing into a $5 billion business. Shares were up 9% yesterday. It's definitely again one of those technology stocks that are going to be bid up because it's basically changing the entire landscape. And I think the ability to get the pure exposure to Asia ex China, I think, is a very compelling investment story for investors. So I think that's definitely a company to watch for into the future. That's for sure.
All right, let's get a look at the calendar today. Again, those FOMC minutes, interesting tonight. We have such mixed data out of the U.S. economy right here. The housing starts and building permits data from July has seen a massive acceleration, essentially back to the highs of the post global financial crisis cycle. So we sort of closed the gap in terms of housing activity. A huge driver there, no doubt, the very low mortgage rates, the benchmark closing in on 3%, the lowest ever, unless there was something lower back in the 60s. I was off the edge of my chart. But just interesting to see what they're saying in terms of anything noting any urgency or any policy discussion. But I think the big policy hints could be more interesting in their big policy review, which is upcoming. We don't have a time on that, but they've suggested they're nearing the end of that process. We'll be looking for that, plus any random hints at the Kansas City Symposium we talked about earlier. That's it from the Fed. And then we have another interesting CPI point. Eurozone is the final one, so it'll be unchanged, but the Canadian July CPI out today, so we'll be looking for that. RBNZ official out talking later today. The Kiwi had a bit of a comeback late yesterday after Aussie Kiwi broke 110, but it's been such a big trend that there'd be a lot more selling there before you've reversed the trend there. And then the rest of the week, pretty quiet stuff. Turkey, quite interesting tomorrow with the rate announcement. Norway out as well tomorrow, the Norwegian Central Bank, and then the latest claims data. Also up today, though, we do have this latest weekly supply figures. Crude oil has just been lying there just completely flat. So anything that sparks tremendous oil market volatility in either direction could be interesting if there's some surprise in that report. And as well, we'd like to get a look at those weekly demand figures out of the U.S., which have been normalizing quite quickly over the last week. So if that's getting towards 10 million barrels a day of implied demand on gasoline, that's getting quite interesting because then you're getting back close to index 100 for the demand for motor fuel. For today, I think we'll call it a wrap, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.